My name is Paige Firth. I'm a proud Aboriginal woman from the Jarrawer tribe of Northern Queensland. On behalf of the Call Out podcast, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land we meet upon today, the Wathaurong people of the Kulin Nation. We would like to pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. We also acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise the continuing connection to lands, waterways, and communities.
Call It Out is a podcast led by students from Sacred Heart College and St. Joseph's College in Geelong. Listening through the lens of young people, the podcast episodes are an insightful journey into contemporary issues impacting them, discussing the themes such as gender equality, unhealthy masculinity, everyday sexism, healthy relationships and consent. We are given an intimate invitation into what young people think.
This episode discusses violence against women and sexual themes.
Hi everyone and welcome back to the Call It Out podcast. My name is Caroline, she, her.
I'm Destiny, she, her.
I'm Hannah, she, her.
And I'm Alex, they, she.
Today we're leading in with the discussion of consent education and why it is important. So just to start with, does everyone want to talk a little bit about why consent education is important?
I think for me, consent education is really important because it's talking about breaking that sort of cycle of violence and creating a greater education for further generations.
I think considering that consent education has only been mandated by the Victorian government as of last year, I think it's important that we start on the right foot and deliver proper education for our youth.
Yeah, going on what Hannah said, I believe that consent really is the basis for your adult life and interacting with other people. So it's important that we get it right early on so we can prevent violence against women, young people, domestic violence in general.
And I think over the past maybe 10 years or so, we've definitely seen like a correlation between the level of consent education in schools and in the media and overall better understanding of consent. Because mm-hmm. I know when I was a kid, that probably wasn't really a discussion that was had within school or media.
We're getting there. There's still lots more to be done, but I think we're at least seeing a lot more in a shift of our attitudes within society where we're seeing people that can identify what is consensual, what is not. And it doesn't just have to apply to sexual relationships. It can be everyday actions with your peers, whether that's in the classroom, in the workplace, anything can be important for consent.
Yeah, I agree. And it wasn't as widely talked about when we were younger. So growing up, we kind of have to break that generational trauma in order to create a better future, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think it was really interesting too, I'm sure we'll touch on this later, but like talking about age-appropriate consent-based education and how that actually is really good for spanning the breadth of consent education that's needed. So in primary school, like teaching about personal space, belongings, words, feelings, like boundaries. And so kind of having that holistic approach to consent from an early age really helps in covering all the facets of consent that need to be discussed.
I think it's super important as well, given that a lot of young adults are only really seeing or only really getting their sex education from pornography. And obviously we know that that is riddled with lack of consent in lots of ways. So I think it's important that this program of consent education is delivered across the board and it's consistent and it's updated so it's for our contemporary society.
Yeah. Pornography in general is very just dehumanising and it kind of, it's a very English language term, but it like widens the social distance between your participants and the video itself. And I feel like we should touch on what consent actually is for listeners. By definition, consent is a freely given, enthusiastic, informed and clear agreement between participants to engage in specific sexual activity. And I guess you could say just really anything in general, just consent as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's such a good like baseline definition for consent, but it's also so important to look at like how broad consent is, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a sexual activity, but it can also be emotional boundaries, boundaries within a friendship, like if you just don't like hugs, that sort of thing, personal space. But that is definitely a really good baseline definition.
Yeah, and with consent comes respect as well. Like even with, like you were saying, Caroline, how friendships and like if you don't like getting hugs, not to be criticised for your personal preferences.
So after that bit of intro discussion, just to outline what else we'll be talking about on this podcast, we're going to get into what consent is specifically, what's currently being taught in schools, how we can improve consent education, and finally prevention early on, as well as hopefully some media examples and like just broad discussion of consent.
So I think a really good example of how you can break down consent is something that our school uses called FRIES. And FRIES stands for Freely Given, Reversible, Informed, Enthusiastic and Specific.
So the FRIES framework was presented to a wide variety of year levels at our school. And we just think we'll have a little bit of a chat about the acronym and what each component means. So freely given, so consent is a choice that you make without pressure, manipulation or coercion, and it doesn't involve when you're under the influence of drugs or alcohol.
So the R in FRIES stands for reversible, which we define as anyone can change their mind about what they feel like doing anytime, even if you've done it before, even if you're both already in that situation, even if you have agreed on that sort of thing before, that's what it means by reversible. You can absolutely take it back.
The I, standing for informed, means that you can only consent to something if you have the full story, i.e. if someone says that they'll use a condom and then they don't, there isn't full consent.
The E in FRIES stands for enthusiastic. When it comes to sex, you should only do stuff that you want to do, not things that you feel like you're expected to do. So it's similar to freely given, that it should be something that is explicitly given in a way where you're enthusiastic about it, so you're not feeling coerced or manipulated to make decisions regarding sex that you're not comfortable with.
And finally, specific means to be firm about setting boundaries and making it clear that you will or will not engage in the activity, just being really, really certain of a yes or a no.
So there are a lot of factors within our contemporary society that affect our knowledge of consent, especially when it comes to explicit sex consent. And one of those factors is pornography. So pornography has been especially prevalent. We've seen a lot of statistics in young children, and it's emerging in their throughout their teenage years, watching pornography. It's had quite a negative impact on our understanding of consent as a society.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think specifically in regards to how I think young men and women and gender diverse people view specifically the women in those situations. I think there's never really a great example of explicit consent being given. It's always an example of sort of a woman giving something up.
And another thing about pornography is that it sets unhealthy expectations of what sex and what sex isn't. So when our young people are growing up being exposed to this type of porn, they're not seeing the accurate representation of what realistic relationships are like and how healthy communication is vital for consent.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think pornography is something that lots of young people are exposed to when they are sort of in that formative stage of learning about those sorts of things and learning about how that might happen in their own life and that sort of thing. So it's not at all an example of something that should be taught, but it is something that they see in such a pivotal stage of learning about consent and learning about sexual relationships, that I think it's that exposure that definitely sets the wrong example.
Yeah, and like I feel like still to an extent it's very highly unregulated. Like there are boundaries, limitations on what you can search for on social media, but still like you can search it on the internet and it'll come up.
Just touching base on what Destiny just mentioned about how pornography is highly unregulated and how it can appear and pop up in a variety of formats. The algorithms when you're looking at social media, if you say, for example, if you save a post that maybe has some sort of mild pornography content in it, it's likely that your feed will then become very porn orientated. So especially for our young people, when their content is not mediated by someone else, it's not overlooked, often that makes them susceptible to watching pornography and not perhaps even realising the damaging effects or even knowing that it is porn.
I feel like it's highly prevalent in Facebook as well.
Absolutely.
Even like foot fetishes. That's so like out of context, but like it's like they will make it really subtle and then people will like, it's like an echo chamber. It just keeps coming back in their feed. Yeah. And, you know, it's really hard sometimes to distinguish whether or not it is subtle porn or it's just them being really, really weird. But, yeah, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, and I think I've seen so many examples of people who either are minors themselves who post themselves online or people who post their children online. And the amount of shares that you see on that sort of post is disgusting.
Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, I did it for media last year. I talked about it in one of my sacks. It was like, I don't know, it was a really young child.
Exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And that poor child was shared and reposted and saved so many times. And, you know, TikTok did nothing to kind of regulate that sort of media. And her mum was perfectly fine with sharing that sort of content and was fully aware of it too. I watched so many video essays on her responses and her attitudes towards it, and it's disgusting.
And I think that's such a good example of consent not necessarily being given in terms of like a sexual situation, like, you know, their mothers and parents are just posting videos of their children online because they think that they're cute and they think they're adorable and they're proud to be their parent, but that child cannot consent to having those videos being put online, and unfortunately that means that they can be taken in a way that we don't want them to be taken in.
And I feel like a lot of people really underestimate how big the internet is and how scary it can be as well. I might be one of those people that's a little bit hyper-vigilant on that sort of thing. Like, I really try to keep everything personal as possible. And there was another child from that was like, I don't remember. It was from another country and she had, like, those really big eyes and she was basically getting abused.
Yeah, with the mother and they're always on the screen. I absolutely know who you're talking about.
Those also ended up on porn sites, I'm pretty sure.
But it was almost a situation of the parents took advantage of the fact that that child was getting so much attention for not being able to express that she didn't want to be there and she didn't want to participate in something that was being taken so wrong.
Exactly.
You know, they would respond to videos, to comments, sorry, of people saying, like, respond if you need help, respond if this isn't okay. And they would make, you know, another cutesy video to it. And it was almost like playing into this sort of, like, unconsensual situation that her child was being put into.
Yep.
And people just soaked it up and gave it even more attention than it, you know, already had.
And I think that a lot of people who you see in the public setting, so if that's content creators, if that's influencers online, if that's celebrities, a lot of them have chosen in the past few years, have been quite a strong movement for them not showing their child's face on their platforms. Yeah. And that is quite a positive thing, I'd say, because a lot of them go into detail and they'll have like a video essay saying, well, look, I don't feel that it's appropriate to film my child and put it on such a public platform when they're not able to give the consent. But there's actually been a lot of backlash and a lot of criticism for those actions, and it's come from people who are watching the account criticising them for their decisions, despite the fact that they're actually respecting and recognising their child's consent.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, that really shows the lack of education there is about consent, like, in a broader sense. It shows that sort of blurred line on what do people classify as consent and what do they classify as, oh, it's my child, I can do what I want, or I want to enjoy this video, you know, I would benefit from seeing a child in this video, that sort of thing. Because there is a real lack of understanding on what is consent actually and why is it so important.
And I think going into that as well, that a lot of people, like you said, there's a bit of a blurred line between consent and it's my child, that's my responsibility to make choices on their behalf. But it goes back to everyone should be deserved to be given their own autonomy, their own choice to make decisions. And when children are at that young age, a lot of the times they're unable to. So it's not necessarily up to the parents to make that decision on their behalf.
And I think some of that prevention of that sort of thing happening can definitely come from educating the child themselves and making them feel like it is absolutely all right to be able to tell your parent or your carer that you don't want to participate in those sorts of things and you don't want to be present in that way. And educating them on, as Destiny said, the effects of social media and how big it is and just how much you don't know where you'll be going with that. and where that content will be presented.
I just, absolutely insane, but I don't remember what video it was and where I found it, but it just popped up in my head.
Yeah.
but with the whole content creators going down that kind of pipeline, I don't know if you guys know Livvy Dunn, but she is an NCAA gymnast in the US, and she is known for, like, she has a very, very big fan base, and I'm pretty sure she's the most paid gymnast in the US. Her fan base is predominantly men, and those men sexualize her. Like, I was looking through her comments a couple of days ago because I also do gymnastics, and I'm kind of like, oh my God. And it's like, oh, Livvy, can you, like, show this? Can you, like, do this for me? Because, you know, there's that typical stereotype, like, if you're flexible, oh, do the splits for me. Can you do that in a sexual way? And that's what the comments kind of insinuate. And then some of them are just straight up, like, I'm not going to say it because this is a PG-13 podcast. Yeah. But it was really explicit, and I'm like, how is this allowed on TikTok? How do these not get taken down? And also, it could, I don't know what Livvy's viewpoint on it, the whole situation is. Like, she might be indifferent to it, she might care for it, but that's not fair to her. And like, she might put these videos up there, but, and she, like, I'm not Livvy, I can't say whether or not she was insinuating something or not, and that's not my problem if she is. Point is that men feel the right to comment on things that are not even related to sex or porn. So,
yeah, I think that phrase you just, like, they feel the right to, is something that is so prevalent in media, and especially in young people, I guess younger and older generations now, in terms of how they understand consent, is that if they want something, they can ask for it. Doesn't matter if asking for it is uncomfortable for the other party. There's a large understanding that consent is, it's all right to ask for something so long as one party wants it. And I think that ties back into that sort of enthusiastic consent being, it has to be from both parties, which is something that I think in education is a little bit lost.
A trope that often appears in books, TV shows, films, media, Instagram, all sorts of platforms like that, is that it's typically the male protagonist. Oh, he wants to be with the girl, and he's persistent and he's trying so hard, and he asks her out, and even when she says no, she says a clear no. She's not giving him consent to be with him. Even Destiny, you talking about Livvy Dunn, I've just quickly done a Google search because I've never heard of her before.
Yep.
But the first article that pops up alongside a few of photos of her is from the US Sun, and it's Olivia Dunn shows off major cleavage in sexy mirror selfie.
Yeah, that's already typically a few red how flags. It goes. Yeah. Like, gymnastics, traditionally you wear a leotard. It's kind of like dance. Like, you want your leotard to be high cut so it elongates your legs. Some leotards, low cut. Like, I was at training yesterday and I bought this new leotard, and it's like one of those low scoot ones, and I feel a little bit uncomfortable wearing it sometimes because, you know, you can see my cleavage sometimes, and it's like, it shouldn't even be a problem, to be honest with you. Like, it's just the way that society has begun to, like, perceive it and, I guess, demonise it in a way. But yeah, Livvy gets bashed for how she presents herself on social media. That's really sad. Like, I love Livvy.
Yeah. And even, like, the wording of these news articles that pop up, a lot of them say the similar thing. There's not much variety, but all mainstream is, like I said, these red flags. Like, you're thinking sexy mirror selfie, like major cleavage, like they're sending signals of, oh, it's a negative connotation, like, oh, it's controversial, where it's just their take, it's just their perception on a photo that she's chosen to take of herself.
You know, she's taking that photo because she feels confident. She likes how she looks that day, and she wants to share it with her fans, or she might like her outfit. And if that's just how those clothes fit her body, that doesn't give people a right to sexualize her when she's not explicitly asking for it.
Yeah, a lot of fans tend to be really entitled or self-entitled to their opinions, and they make it very, very heard. Even like on forums and stuff or on Facebook groups. I was on one for NCAA gymnastics for a little bit, and then I got really sick of what I was seeing. And a lot of it was about Livy and how she presents herself on social media. So, you know, it's a very common thing that people feel like they have the right to talk about.
Yeah. Mm. I think there's a sort of thirst trap culture surrounding people with large fan bases, especially if they're conventionally attractive, is even if they are have explicit... Like, I've seen so many cases where there'll be a thirst trap on TikTok and you'll go to the comments and people will say, oh, by the way, they've said they're really uncomfortable with being sexualized like that. And then you'll go to the account and it's hundreds of videos of that person, you know, being, you know, made to be sexually presented or presented as, you know, super attractive and that sort of thing, even despite the fact that maybe the content they're making isn't at all in those realms, or they have stated that they're not comfortable with even being seen in sort of like an attractive light, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But there's a major, what do I call it, a culture about, fans just doing whatever they want because they support the person. They say, well, I'm, you know, I'm watching their videos, I'm paying for their rent.
Minecraft in particular.
Yeah, Minecraft is
2020, 2021 is when I saw that the most. I mean, I'm not innocent. I was like 16 at the time. I will take full responsibility. But at the same time, you kind of look back on it now and it's like these people, these content creators are not, they're not there for you to sexualize them and whatnot. And obviously because their fan base is so young, some of them are older and some of them know better, but then they're growing up with that idea that they have the freedom to do that when they don't. And then, yeah, you'll see on, like, Twitter and stuff like that, that they'll come out with statements saying, like, hey, I'm not comfortable with you doing this. I particularly saw this with Tubbo and Tommy in it.
Oh, yeah, I remember
Sometimes Rambu as well. I can't quite remember. Again, it's been a long time. I don't associate myself with that fan base anymore. but, yeah, they'd come out and say, look, I'm not comfortable with you guys doing this and making edits of me in this sort of way. I'm here to create content about Minecraft and you are here sexualizing me in this way that is just not okay. And they'll still do it.
Yeah, and I think there was a theme of that where a lot of those content creators were still teenagers.
Yeah,
they were still 17, 18. And a lot of people took that as, I'm also under 18, I'm also still a teenager, I can do what I want. And that it really shows to how little there is, I guess, awareness.
And I think it links back as well to this overarching concept of victim blaming when we see people, like, whether that's individuals or groups who are sexualized without their, that's not their intention, and it's not with their consent that this content is being manipulated into a, like, porn site or in a sexualized way, is that we're effectively, like, people like Livy, we're blaming her, or not we, but society's blaming her for her choices that she makes and what she posts, what she doesn't, what she wears, what she doesn't. So it's all about that appearance that you see in the public forum and how people can manipulate that and then ultimately point the finger at her and say, well, it's her fault.
Absolutely. And that ties in really well to, I think, how we've taught consent for so long and the issues that come with it. You know, I think, and especially in separating what we assume to be young women and young boys, you see a lot of teaching young women to, I've got an example here, to cover your drink when you go out, not let anyone put anything in your drink. But you don't see a lot of education to just don't put things in people's drinks. Don't do things that damage other people, because it is not your right to that person's body and it's not your right to do that to them. They don't want that. And there is, yeah, there has been sort of a culture spoken where you teach prevention but you don't teach prevention from the right side of prevention.
Yeah.
You teach it from preventing something happening to yourself rather than not doing something harmful to another person.
Even when I think about our party safe education and our sex education units in the junior years of high school, a lot of it was based around alcohol, there wasn't much sex education at all that was actually relevant or valuable to us. But talking about covering your drinks, that was one of the main things that they spoke about, is how to cover your drinks, how to organise with your friends to have one person who will, like, watch your drink.
And always have one person with you. Never be alone in a club, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't leave by yourself. Yeah. Don't go outside, take someone to the bathroom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these are all things that all three of us have picked up, and I would say a lot of people our age, and coming from a predominantly female school where we're taught that this is our strategy, we've got to pick a game plan. And like you said, prevention from the wrong point of view, it should be actually teaching or educating our young people to go, well, don't spike someone's drink, don't sexualise them, don't be inappropriate with them. All these things take place when we're preventing from the wrong point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was wondering what you guys sort of thought about how we as viewers and consumers of media can sort of stop promoting that sort of online activity and start encouraging that sort of more consensual behaviour online.
I think one of the first steps that a lot of people can take, even if it's not a really proactive step, if it's just small progressions, is to unfollow or unsubscribe from people whose content is really negative or really derogatory in that sense. So even like the big push with Andrew Tate, and there was, I guess, a little bit of a trend where if anybody that you know follows him, you unfollow them. So I think that's a small step we can take to show that we're not accepting these people and what they're putting out there and how they're treating other people in this way.
Yeah, I think I've heard the term like deplatforming used a lot, is not providing them the agency to create those sort of situations where people become uncomfortable and people become used and that sort of thing and presented in a way that they might not want to be.
I think especially provided that people are comfortable with, especially if it's something personal to them, like reporting this sort of behaviour online, because that means that it can get kicked off the platform virtually, in the sense that even with Andrew Tate, he's no longer on Instagram, I believe. Yeah. Unfortunately, the content is still cropping up everywhere because people keep reposting it and sending it to others. But yeah, I think if you report this type of action, it prevents it from occurring again.
I think, yeah, there is an issue with people giving that sort of thing attention, even if it's not in a positive way. I know there have been times where I've gotten content like Andrew Tate's come up on my like my YouTube shorts and that sort of thing, but it's not because people are saying, oh, this guy's great. It's because people are in the comments giving it thousands of shares and comments saying, oh, this guy's awful, but it's still providing him with more and more algorithm to get to more people, which means that, you know, that might come up on the YouTube of a young boy who hasn't quite figured that out or hasn't been taught those sort of things, and he'll read right into it or, you know, that sort of thing. And it encourages people to learn from that behaviour, seeing, you know, an adult man who has his life together and is successful. And if they see that and they see this is how he's acting, they'll reflect it.
Sort of adding fuel to the flame there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just on the topic of de-influencing as well, I think it's become more prevalent in YouTube that people are becoming more aware. This is just like on the other side of the spectrum, like with Colleen Ballinger and James Charles, for instance, like they have been deplatformed essentially. Like they'll try and come back to YouTube, but essentially due to things like consent and inappropriate communications with minors and stuff like that, people are beginning to understand a little bit more that that's not okay. And, you know, I think in a sense the media can be used in a way that's positive to get that sort of attention out there and say, hey, this isn't okay. We need to talk about this and what can we do better in the future, and get those victims' voices out there. So that's just, yeah, on the other side of the whole coin. But, yeah, negatively speaking, it's more prevalent, like with Andrew Tate.
I think in that way media can act, like you've kind of mentioned, as a double-edged sword, in the fact that it can be a great tool for speaking out about these instances, and especially for survivors to speak about their experiences and how we can move past this. But also it is a site where people can post anything they want. It's highly unmonitored, unfiltered, so especially for our younger viewers who, like said Alex, might still be sorting out who they are. They might be new to social media. They're just given a whole influx of this information, and the algorithms allow that to keep running into their system.
Yeah, and it is that sort of, it ties into that, as we were talking about before, the children being online either unguarded or parents encouraging their presence on social media. I think, you know, when people who, you know, have not formed those ideas in themselves and haven't lived those situations and those sorts of things, I think it, without supervision and without adults also understanding where those sort of lines blur and the dangers that come with that sort of content and those sort of exposures to that sort of content.
And I think parent or like carer guardianship over children and what they're exposed to on social media, it's a little bit of a taboo topic, and it's been like highly criticised or highly supported. I feel like a lot of people think, well, it's great that parents are supervising their children, ensuring that everything that they're, I guess, exposed to online is safe and appropriate. But also, as we touched base earlier in the podcast, it's again, do we give our children that autonomy to choose what they watch? But that's the other side of the argument as well.
Yeah. Just adding on to that as well, I guess it also comes down to the fact that teaching them in those earlier years, because I know that I was exposed to a lot of things as a child, but, you know, obviously didn't pick up the negative side effects as detrimentally as another child would that wasn't taught proper consent. Like, for example, we were talking off the podcast earlier about consent in books, and like a lot of readers didn't pick up on the fact, and very much romanticising the fact that, like, Colleen Hoover's book It Ends With Us is a romance book, but it's not. And I feel like if children and young people are just taught consent from an early age, you'll be able to read between those lines a lot more, and kind of see a different side of that book rather than just being, oh my God, like, they're in love, like, let's just romanticise all this domestic violence and whatnot.
Mm. And you want to teach our young people especially to be critical thinkers, like you said, read between the lines, and instead of seeing this, I guess, this proliferation of all Colleen Hoover novels, like, I think a lot of bookstores that I've been to will have this whole section, almost like a shrine of Colleen Hoover books. And you say, oh, bestseller, it's a TikTok read. Everyone, it just draws people to it because it has gained so much traction in the last few months. But I think if you definitely teach, if you equip our young children with the knowledge of consent education and respectful relationships, means that they might actually be able to go, you know what, it's not a romance novel. That is abuse. That's not appropriate. No.
Education differences between, like, when I was younger and where I'm at now with that sort of thing, even things that aren't necessarily consent but are just, like, a little bit weird. Not even a little bit, a lot of it weird. I know as a youngin', I loved Twilight. Like, I was a massive Twilight nerd. Loved it. Team Edward all the way. Absolutely adored it. We watched it in literature at the end of last year and I was like, this is creepy. This is really weird. I hate it. I can't, like, the books are now at the bottom of my bookshelf. Like, I don't want to pick them up. I don't like them. I can't do it. Because I was just watching it and I was like, you're watching her in her sleep and you came into her house without permission and you have been for months. That's a bit odd.
Few red flags there.
I actually haven't read the books. I used to have them on my shelf because they were my mum's before I moved out. And I just couldn't bring myself to read them. Like, I've watched the movies and I've gone, nope, next one. So, I don't know. It's a bit of it gives me fever dream vibes. I'm not gonna lie.
And it has that, like, heavy reliance on, like, my life cannot go on without this boyfriend who is 109 years old and has groomed me into being his pretty little princess.
I'm not going to lie. I really just didn't enjoy Twilight at all.
No,
I don't know how people are like, oh my God, this is the best movie ever.
Yeah. Younger me was like, oh, my mum gave me this book and it's a big girl book and, like, how cool is this? And I read it and I was like, oh, romance. And now I read it or I watch it and I'm like, I just can't do it. Awful.
Yeah. To add to the Colleen Hoover discourse on It Ends With Us, there's also, a part or a big section of the book where Ryle, the... Can you even call him a love interest at this point? I don't want to.
the antagonist. The villain.
Yeah, pretty much. He begs Lily to have sex with him, basically. He's like, I can't stop thinking about you. Please, please, please. Comes to her house in the middle of the night, that sort of thing. And then eventually she gives in. It's like, oh.
Coercion. It's a perfect example of coercion. Mm-hmm. It displays that it's not, if we go back to our fries, it's not freely given. It's so pressured and pressured and pressured and pressured that they no longer feel like there is an option to say no, because they feel like they're doing a disservice to this person who they might have feelings for, or they might, you know, be good friends with, and they you know, it creates like a guilt around that.
So when we're talking about consent, it's important to go back to prevention strategies and how we can prevent the case of coercion or any of these acts from happening in the first place. So specifically in schools, from a whole school approach, it's imperative that comprehensive sex education and consent is most effective when it's based on the whole school, underpinned by strong research and evidence-based practices. So even if you look at Consent Labs, the foundation, some of their programs include like the foundations of consent, recognising sexual harassment and assault, consent, especially with alcohol and other drugs, which we touched based on, we were taught a lot about that in our early years, like year 8 to 9. Healthy relationships, classified consent needs to be explicitly taught, and hopefully with the Fries framework in mind, positive masculinity and sexuality, and how to respond to sexual harassment and assault.
Absolutely. So, yeah, really targeting our young people and making sure that they see the resources and they are informed, all, as Hannah said, all the way through their education. And it's not just targeted specifically at, you know, ages 16 and above, because we know that it goes beyond that, and we know that you need to see it further than that.
Just adding on to that as well, I really think that consent, just like basic consent, should be taught as young as like prep, kinder. You know, consent is something that you build on. It's not just sexual consent, as we've been talking about. It's like, please, thank you, can I do this? You know, that sort of stuff. And you don't, like, once you get to the age of 16, I feel like you're already exposed to all of that media that we've been talking about, and you need to be able to critically think and be able to say, is this right? Should I be doing this? Instead of just getting handed all of these resources and getting taught all this all in one big thing. And I feel like it's a little bit less meaningful if it's just taught as like one curriculum and then you move on and never talked about again.
Absolutely. And because as we've been speaking about, there's so many different ways that we use consent in our everyday life, specifically all the way through the different age levels. You know, as a young child, you need to be able to say, no, I don't want to do that, or you know, I'm not comfortable with that, even if it's, you know, to a parent or to a friend, or you know, even on the playground or anything like that. You know, it's so important to be teaching that. And then as you get into your old age, you know, you need to have that base foundation.
No, that's right.
No, we just, it is about having that understanding that the respect has to come from both sides, and it is constant throughout your entire life. It's not always going to be sexual. It's not always going to be explicit, but it is, it, you know, it comes from that very early understanding of, I have respect for you and you have respect for me and my choices.
And I think we see this predominantly in the younger years, when you see, say, a child and they've got their grandparents or family members, it's give me a kiss, give me a hug. And often at times they don't really, they're not equipped with the knowledge to go, oh no, or they say no, but it's often seen as, oh, they're poorly behaved. Yeah. That's disrespectful, when in fact they're just trying to express the fact, they're trying to convey that they're not comfortable with this, even things like personal space.
Yeah.
In primary school, I remember we had like a small activity you can do with young children is to get like a hula hoop. It's like, okay, this is my personal space. Like, or even the bubble theory.
Yeah.
Like, don't pop my bubble.
Yeah.
It's just about respecting boundaries.
I feel like consent, learning about consent, can also go for parents as well in that sort of case. Like, there should be some sort of education on that, because obviously they we're taught a lot differently than what we're being taught now and what we're going to teach in the future. And as you were saying, like my mum, I remember quite a few years ago, I was like, I don't like being hugged. And she got offended. That knowledge around consent and like that mutual understanding needs to be really prevalent in parent and child relationships in order for there to be mutual respect between both participants.
Yeah, because I think that is there is that difference between, you know, you might say to your parent, no, I don't want a hug, and they'll get angry about it, or they won't understand why you don't want to give them a hug. But then there are days where you walk in and you say, you know, hi, Mum, how was your day? And she says, well, I just don't want to talk about it right now. And you go, absolutely, you know, I'll see you at dinner. And they have an understanding of, like, I don't have to do that if I don't want to, but they don't necessarily understand the why and why it's so important that they have the option to be able to say that. And so it's, you know, they have that understanding, that base level understanding of course, you know, I have respect for myself and for you, but it's about putting that really intentional education on it and making it clear to them that, you know, this is why we do that. That is why it's so important. And that's, you know, how can you reinforce that to your child? So that being said, what do you guys think you'd like to see more of going forward in terms of education for young people?
Specifically with consent education, which has now been mandated across Victorian schools, I'd like to see consent that's not just taught from the book, not just, all right, remember this definition, almost see consent in action like Destiny mentioned earlier, teaching it from the younger years so that, like, even if it's little activities where it's like, okay, identify, was this consensual, was this not? I'd like to see in action.
Yeah, I would like to see it across all year levels, including the younger ones, but also because obviously we've got our sibling school Joey's, like that stigma around consent and teaching consent to like all boys schools, or typically speaking. And I'd also like to see in the future like that really deep dive into like contemporary examples as we've been talking about, and really being able to think about what we're consuming in that sort of sense.
Yeah, I would really like to see more emphasis and more education on those key parts of consent. I think we see consent as quite a broad topic, and we don't really zoom into those really important aspects like it's reversible, it's informed, it's enthusiastic, it is specific, and really educating on that prevention aspect of it and that sort of mutual respect, rather than how we are seeing it sort of as we see it now.
Thank you for joining us in the Call It Out podcast. Stay tuned for more upcoming episodes.